Welcome back, everyone, to the channel. Tonight's terrifying story is about this personal investigator who is out looking for these five missing college kids that disappear while they're on a camping trip. Now, I don't know about any type of PI investigations. Hell, I'm still trying to figure out who took my lunch in the cafeteria at my job. Yeah, I know it was you, Freddy. Now let's get spooky. If you're new to the channel, subscribe. Click on that bell and smash that thumbs up and tell a friend. It never ceases to amaze me how naive people can be. But that comes with the territory of being young. Sooner or later, they all either wise up or don't make it past a certain age. Unfortunately, sometimes the latter is what brings clients to me. Several weeks ago, a group of parents came to see me about looking into what happened to their children who all disappeared while camping. It was immediately apparent that they were all quite wealthy and couldn't believe that anything bad could ever happen to their kids, much less they could make any reckless or poor decisions. Believe me, I'm not saying that parents shouldn't love their kids unconditionally, but it's one thing to love someone. It's totally another to be totally blind to any faults. I've seen parents or spouses like this a million times. The wide-eyed, naive type who I am forced to give a nasty dose of reality to during the course of conducting an investigation. I'm looking into human beings, not martyrs. And the more concrete facts I have, the better the chance I have to find a missing person. So that's how I wound up driving on some godforsaken road at night. I had my GPS, my cell phone, a backup throwaway phone, and my standard sidearm, and I still hated being out here. Some may chalk it up to being a city dweller, but that's not it at all. I love nature. But I'm not stupid about it. I know that the country could be just as violent and dangerous as the city, just in a slightly different way. My initial research showed that in addition to being a hotspot for camping, there have been several unexpected disappearances in that area over the years. That should have been the first clue not to set up camp there. But apparently Eric, Josh, Kara, Denise, and Corey didn't get the memo, or simply didn't care. That's the thing about certain people. You tell them not to do something, and they just want to do it even more. I will give them credit for going in a group. And since they were all pre-med students, they all had some knowledge of first aid. The five kids were last seen on the night of August 18th at about 7:40 p.m., when they went into the closest Walmart for some supplies. That was the last time they were ever seen in public, and they were reported missing days later. When law enforcement began looking into it, the local park rangers found their cars and all their equipment just as they had left it. But the five people themselves were gone. There was no sign of a struggle, no signs they had tried to call for help, and no evidence that anything bad had happened at all. They were just gone. That's the problem with cases like this. Someone goes missing in a city, there's always something or someone that sees at least part of what happened. If you run into trouble in the middle of nowhere, usually the only sign that something bad happened is a body or a lot of blood. As you could imagine, the reason why the kids' parents all chipped in and hired me, because they were so unhappy with how little there was for law enforcement to go on. If you got the money and want something bad enough, you could get a second opinion on anything anymore. It may not do you any good, but it's usually available. Birchfield, the nearest town to where the missing five were camping, was fairly well populated and had plenty of stores and restaurants. I also found out that there was an abandoned summer camp nearby, which immediately made me think of all the movie cliches before it came clear that the camp went out of business for normal reasons. I never went to summer camp myself. It always just seemed so dull. Who the hell wants to get up at the crack of dawn to go canoeing and make a birdhouse out of some popsicle sticks? There's only one person who ever had the right idea about summer camp, and that's Wednesday Adams. I'm not trying to hate on all forms of camping. I love a nice bonfire or cookout, and I get the appeal of taking a modern camper to a specially designated area. But sleeping in a tent where the only thing between you and anything or anyone out in the woods is just a zipper? Pass. Sleeping in my car is a far more appealing prospect. I sighed in relief as I finally caught sight of my hotel. After picking a spot in the parking lot, I grabbed my suitcase and wheeled it into the lobby, where the sound of my shoes briefly echoed on the smooth marble entryway before the lobby's thick green carpet muffled the sound of my footsteps as I walked towards the front desk. "Hello, how may we assist you?" The clerk manning it greeted me. "Reservation for Parker?" The guy clicked away at the computer while I leaned on the counter. If I had to say, I'd put him in his late 20s, which meant he was about my age. "We've got you right here, Mr. Parker. Room 114, two queen beds." "That's right." "Here's your room key. Breakfast begins at 7 every morning and lasts until noon. Is there anything else I could do for you?" "Any good restaurants in town?" "Oh yes, there's the Pine Cafe just down the street from the post office, the Stonemason Inn, and of course all the usual chains around here are fair enough. There's plenty of pizza places, and the room service here is quite good actually." "Thank you." After unlocking the door to my room, I immediately began making myself at home. Next to the TV, I set up the small bulletin board I'd brought with me so I could keep track of my investigation. Josh Lopez and Corey Barnett were old friends who were attending the same university here in Illinois. While there, Josh began dating Kara Sullivan, while Corey began a relationship with Denise Harlow. While the spring semester ended and summer arrived, they decided to take a road trip across the country. They managed that just fine, and decided to end the summer by going camping right here in their home state. Accompanying them was Denise's brother Eric, who was a year behind the other four in school, which makes him a freshman. The five of them were last seen 3 days into their camping trip, and were reported missing by their respective families a few days later. A massive search party was dispatched, but they found nothing. They even sent in divers to inspect the local lake, but nothing was found there either. After their last known public sighting at the store, Kara had posted a picture on her Instagram of them all sitting around a fire at their campsite. That picture was uploaded at about 10 p.m., and that was the last known update about their whereabouts. Those were the facts I knew. Now I had to try to figure out what happened when the record trailed off. I will admit there was one thing that did concern me. The fact that five people all went missing. One or two people going missing is one thing, but five people all going missing at the same time is an attention getter. Since the weather wasn't bad, and they obviously did get stranded on the mountains or something, that left two scenarios. They either all decided to run away together, or they were met with some form of foul play. While rich kids can certainly be temperamental and run away, that just didn't seem likely. So that left foul play as the most likely scenario. I wrote the foul words on a yellow sticky note and posted it on the middle of the bulletin board. Now, if there was foul play, that meant that someone had to be responsible for it. That was what I had to answer. Who may have been responsible and why? I did know that the five of them didn't have much cash on them, and since there was no activity on their credit cards or bank accounts, That meant this probably wasn't a crime for profit or any material gain. I made a mental note to check on the abandoned summer camp. Clichés aside, there's an excellent chance that there might be something or someone there. Since it wasn't too late, I ordered a pizza for delivery, and amused myself in the meantime by watching some reruns of South Park. Today seemed to be my lucky day because the Casa Bonita episode, one of my all-time favorites, was just starting. By the time Cartman was frantically trying to soak up all that Casa Bonita had to offer, there was a knock at my door. A quick check revealed it to be the pizza guy. Handing over the cash with a respectable tip, I grabbed the box and retreated back inside my room where I wasted no time in digging in. Not surprisingly, it tasted delicious. I watched some more TV before I called it a night. I woke up early the next morning, and after a quick breakfast and some soggy French toast, I texted my longtime associate, who happens to be an attorney, about where I was headed in case something happened. I could practically see her rolling her eyes about the abandoned summer camp. Taking care to drive slowly, I weaved my way through the gnarled trees dotting the road and drove towards the old camp. Eventually, the remnants of what looked like an old welcome sign greeted me on the way in. Despite the place had been closed for a long time, I could tell there had been plenty of visitors because of some of the tracks left on the road and on the grass in various places. The camp itself was pretty poor looking. A load of broken down old shacks that were cabins once, and a few older structures littered the overgrown and patchy grass. Based on how long it's been closed, there was no chance that someone didn't stumble onto the camp and use it for one purpose or another. Whether it was some kids exploring it for the thrill, a homeless person using it for shelter, or an addict looking to get high, someone had to have ventured here at one point or another. Even though it was a warmer day, I made sure to wear long pants. Aside from poison ivy, there are plenty of other things you need to be careful of. Black widow spiders might be the most infamous, but they aren't the only spider you need to be on a lookout for. The brown recluse had gotten more well-known over the years. It may not have as nearly a flashy a name as the black widow, but its venom more than makes up for it. On top of that, I just felt cold being here. With all the vast open spaces and trees to hide behind, someone could be watching you. The thought matched some graffiti on a nearby wall, which proclaimed, "I'm watching you." The rest of the graffiti was illegible gibberish for the most part, but I thought that a brick wall by the woods was tagged with the phrase, "Get out now." The area was full of dense green spruce trees, which provided plenty of coverage should you need something to hide behind. If I was faintly on edge from being around here, I can't imagine how the five kids felt that night. Walking back out into the open field, I carefully took the area in. Being out here in the woods gives you a faint sense of what things used to be like. I never understood the fascination with the old saying about a tree falling in the woods and no one being around to hear it. It struck me as a trivial obsession. One of those academic factoids people love to throw around in the hopes of tripping each other up. Quite frankly, if you were alone in the woods desperately trying to make a sound and no one heard it, you wouldn't care what people called it. Even with your smartphone, you could be out in the woods, and if you screamed, it wouldn't mean a thing if no one heard it. Since people go missing in the woods all the time, no one being around to hear a sound in the woods had ceased to be an existential question, and is now a reality. Personally, I much prefer the tagline from Alien about no one being able to hear you scream in space. It's simple, though provoking, and true. It's also no wonder that space is called the final frontier, because the only major difference between outer space and the wilderness is that something going wrong in space will kill you much faster. Cautiously, making my way inside a cabin marked D, I could tell someone had set up a little lab there. It had the unmistakable smell of burning chemicals, the telltale scorch marks of a fire that had been hastily put out, and some remaining bits of drug paraphernalia scattered about. By a broken window, I could see some scrapes of aluminum foil and several empty pneumonia bottles. With all the woods out here, the area would be a wet dream for any trailer moonlighting as a portable meth lab. That would explain the massive tire tracks I saw in places on the way in. So that meant there were people making meth in the abandoned area close to where the five college students vanished without a trace. Therefore, it was possible that the missing five stumbled upon the cooks or vice versa and something happened. Or perhaps the five kids were in on the game. This seems less likely, but considering they were all pre-med students and had taken plenty of science classes, it was worth noting. In all honesty, I don't think we would have found the five kids alive, if we ever found them at all. Missing person cases are particularly brutal because time is most definitely not on your side. Aside from the first 48 hours thing, the more time passes, the less interest people have. There is always another missing person or another tragedy to focus on, and unless you personally feel an impact, people tend to move on. The flip side of the tragedy is that most personally affected are most never able to move on. They learn to live with it, cope with it, and maybe get some degree of normalcy. But they will never recover and are never the same. The four sets of parents that I saw in my office would never be the same. Even if everything managed to turn out alright, they would never be able to see the world around them in the same way again. For people of means, this is a particularly brutal pill to swallow. I'd imagine that the kids were exactly like their parents and that they never expect anything remotely like this to happen to them. While most people that age tend to think they're invincible, those from rich families are particularly vulnerable to that misconception. So that's why after being out here myself, I was strongly inclined to think that they ran away or did anything on their own initiative. That would take savvy, a motive, and a desire to escape, which the five of them simply didn't seem to have. I don't mean they were dumb or anything, just that these kids in no way screamed angry college students who hated life. By all measures, they were all happy, well-adjusted and content, which is how one hopes all teenagers should be. So that just leaves one remaining option. Something happened to them out here. The fact that it was five college students who just vanished without a trace kept sticking out at me. That's enough people to make an entire family. It's also important to remember that the old saying strength in numbers is really true. Because odds are good that of five people, at least one of them had some street smarts and common sense. We know that they returned to their campsite after they were last seen at the store, so they had to have made it back fine. But whatever happened after that is unknown, or at least up until this point. The main problem was because of the size of the park and surrounding woods. Literally anything or anyone could come and go totally unnoticed. Because some time had passed between when the five of them were last seen and when they were reported missing, that meant there was a huge window for anyone responsible to escape without anyone being aware of it. I poked around a bit longer, but since the area had already been well combed, there wasn't much point in sticking around. Searching an area of interest is a lot like window shopping at a mall. You don't have the specific MO, but oftentimes things will pop out at you, especially if you aren't expecting it. After taking one last look, I walked back to my car and hopped inside before I navigated my way back towards the main road. going to the abandoned camp was helpful, but there was no definitive leads there. To get a better handle on the area, I needed to chat up with the locals. No matter where you go, every town has that place. The place people talk about in hushed tones and wary expressions. It could be a house, a farm, a park, a street, or even an entire community. But it's always there. If anything happened to the five kids, odds are good that it may have happened there. And someone knows something about it. It may only be a bit of secondhand gossip or a rumor, but in towns like this, nothing bad happens without someone hearing something about it. The ideal people to talk to are anyone with plenty of access to gossip and people traveling through town. The manager of my hotel may have heard something, but my best bet would be the two B's, a barbershop or a bar. Between those two places where you are literally encouraged to sit around and chat with people for no reason at all, you are almost certain to get some tidbit. There is nothing people love more than talking about the latest dirt on a crime, especially one that happened right in everyone's backyard. If I'm really lucky, or not, depending on your point of view, I might just run into one of the people behind the disappearances there. You never know. The person you're sitting right next to or walking past may turn out to be the murderer. Setting on the bar as my first stop, I drove along until I reached it. It was right on the main road on the opposite end of town from my hotel. Casually walking in, my eyes took a moment to adjust to the lighting after being in the bright sun for a while. It was your average bar. If you've ever been in enough of them, they all start to look alike. Besides, after enough drinks, you're lucky to remember your name, much less what the bar looked like. There weren't that many patrons when I walked in. A few random groups of people here and there, but that was fine. The real gold mines of info were the bartenders. Forget spilling tea. I'll take some spilled liquor every time. Just imagine all the dirt they get from intoxicated patrons. Making a beeline for the counter, I wasted no time in trying to make myself comfortable on the wooden bar stools that are a nightmare to sit on long term. They're about as comfortable as sitting on a park bench. Fortunately, the bar had only a few patrons, so that meant plenty of chance for me to chat up with the one bartender on duty. "Hey, what could I get you?" the bartender asked while putting a napkin in front of me. He looked to be in his early 30s, and had a full beard that matched his black hair. But I could tell that if he shaved it, he'd also shave probably a decade off his appearance. "Whatever you have on tap." "Sure thing." I proceeded to make some chit-chat with him while nursing my beer. After exchanging the usual pleasantries, I told him that I was stopping in town for work, and I was trying to get a feel for the area. The bartender revealed that his name was Jared, and he had been working here on and off for the last 3 years, trying to save up money to move out and go to grad school. "I feel you, man. By the way, what's the deal with those posters I see all over town? I swear you can't go anywhere without seeing a flyer." "You mean the campers who went missing?" "I guess. I mean, I'm not trying to trivialize or anything, but why the big production?" "Oh, you know how it is. Couple rich kids go missing and everyone is on it like a vulture on roadkill." "You could say that again." "Yeah, I'm just glad the sideshow had died down. Believe me, I don't wish ill on them or anything, and I hope they all turn up safe and stuff. But hey, you go out into the woods, you gotta know what the hell you're doing and where you're going." "Right. I certainly don't plan on going camping at all while I'm here. I love the outdoors, but to a point." "I don't blame you, but you should be pretty safe around here for the most part. Just be sure to avoid Spruce Grove, especially at night." "Appreciate it, man. Don't want to run into a bear or something." "Honestly, if you went down there and ran into a bear, you should be grateful that's all you found." My new friend looked briefly around him before resuming the conversation in a slightly quieter tone. "I don't know anything for certain, but I've occasionally had people mention going past there and they didn't like it." That's crazy, I offered while a bit of adrenaline surged through my chest. Sure is. The best I could gather is that people stumble upon something that freaks them out. It's always some variation of, I got a bad feeling while I was out there, or something. Since it's about 40 minutes from here, I don't have much reason to go around there myself. Weird, but there are places like that everywhere. What is it exactly, a town? That's true and no. It's more like a township, but even that's being generous. It's basically a cluster of land with a lot of woods that for some reason or another people decide to mark and name. Gotcha. The reason I say to be particularly careful at night is because there is like no light around there at all. And I'm sure you know, weird shit happens in the dark, especially in the woods. That's as best as I could figure out. I appreciate the tip, and it does indeed. While finishing my beer, I made some more casual chit-chat with Jared before leaving a generous tip and returning to my hotel. Unfolding a map of the area on the desk by the other bed, I noted that despite the dense woodlands, there weren't too many bodies of water around, and they all had been thoroughly searched. So that meant someone would have had to either very carefully dispose of 5 bodies without leaving a mess, or they had to leave the area while still alive. I also made a small red circle of the area known as Spruce Grove. There was no way I would be checking the place out tonight. If the area was remotely as dark as Jared had made it out to be, then it would be downright stupid for me to go running around there and not have checked it out first in the daytime. I would head out in the morning first to get a feel of the place, and then go back at night having studied the area. After ending the night with a Subway sandwich and a movie on TV, I headed to bed. Getting up early again, I headed out to find Spruce Grove. As I was getting near the area, I began to understand why the bartender said people got a bad feeling around there. The area was so dense with trees that visibility would be a non-starter. Even in the daytime, there was a thick covering of trees, which gave you plenty of shade. There was also very little in the way of artificial lighting, so that meant driving around here at night would be interesting. Fortunately, I always bring along my night vision gear. I also remembered that since we were going south, that meant we were getting closer to the intersection. That seemed like a small detail, but it's not when you remember that 2 out of the 5 missing students are female. Both Kara and Denise are objectively quite attractive, and while that usually would not mean a thing in terms of my investigation, there is a good reason to note it. The fact that 2 attractive young women went missing near a heavily wooded area close to a major intersection means that there's a good chance that they may have fell victim to human trafficking. Since everything seemed to point to something happening to the 5 of them, I was trying to figure out what that may be. Nothing overly violent took place at their campsite, and they didn't encounter any trouble on the road, so that considerably limited the possibilities. If the 2 women were abducted with a motive in mind, that would square with nothing bad happening at their campsite. The sheer thought of that gave me chills, and I sincerely hoped that it wasn't true. But I reassured myself that it might not be the case, as the 3 men were also missing. From what I could tell, the 3 guys were decent people and would never have let the 2 women just be taken, so they would most certainly have put up a fight. All 3 were quite strong-built and played football, so they were certainly capable of using their fists and holding their own. The other option is that someone would have just found some way to distract them or picking them off one by one, which is more probable than something happening to all 5 of them at the exact same time. I eventually parked when I was well in the middle of Spruce Grove. After taking care to make sure my sidearm was both concealed and handy, I set off to look around. Stepping carefully through the maze of trees, I kept a close eye out for any sign of human activity. The woods are cool for recreation purposes, but having to work out there is my worst nightmare. Discerning anything is almost impossible, and everything looks the same. Short of coming across an actual body, investigative work in the woods is practically a non-starter. While finding bodies and other disturbing things out in the woods is certainly awful, finding no trace of humanity is unsettling in its own way. It would have been horrifying to stumble across the campsite of the five kids and find that it looked like Freddy Krueger had visited them in the night. But finding the camp with everything still there, minus the inhabitants, certainly wasn't any more comforting. Despite my best efforts, I found absolutely nothing. I simply decided to come back in the evening to see if that changed anything. I relaxed at the hotel for a few hours before I grabbed my gun and other supplies and headed back out. This was a long shot for sure, but a lot of times my work comes down to long shots. If there wasn't anything new to be found there, then in all likelihood there would be nothing new to be found anywhere. I had been warned in advance that the area would be dark, but that isn't quite the same as actually experiencing it. This wasn't darkness you get when you turn the lights out at home. This was the kind of darkness that our ancestors must have faced in pioneer times. The rampant superstition of the times may seem outrageous to us in our well-illuminated classrooms, but out there at night, in the middle of nowhere with nothing and no one around, it suddenly becomes a lot more understandable. Although, deep down, the ingrained paranoia from ominous things lurking just out of reach hasn't gone anywhere. Superstition about witches and other things that go bump in the night may be out of fashion, but there are plenty of more sophisticated conspiracy theorists eager to take their place. Instead of someone being accused of making a deal with the devil for power, people love to theorize that they belong to some secret society or something. While there is no way in hell I was getting out of my car and exploring the woods at night, the sight was no less eerie. After I finally got back to where I had been earlier, I put my car in park, turned off the headlights, and got out my night vision goggles. While technically my car was still on, the total darkness around it was striking. I gave a brief glance around using my night vision goggles, and after I saw nothing, I decided that if I didn't notice anything out of the ordinary in 15 minutes, I was heading back to the hotel. As I did a steady 360 look, I drummed my fingers on the steering wheel. In a profession like mine, tinted windows are a necessity, so the fact that no one could see into the car was a relief. But that still didn't completely shake the feeling of exposure that came with being out here all alone at night. As the minutes silently ticked by, I sat upright in my seat, fully alert, expecting to see someone or something creep out of the darkness. But nothing ever happened. Just a dark bit of woods at night. When the 15 minutes I had allotted myself was eventually up, I turned my lights back on and headed back the way I came. The dense woods began to thin out a bit as I got closer to town. PI work is interesting, because usually when you find nothing, it results in mixed emotions. I was happy that I didn't stumble onto anything creepy or dangerous, but simultaneously a bit dejected because it meant that I now had no new leads. But such is the nature of the job. I was looking forward to getting back to my hotel and unwinding, and I remembered that I was getting close to the old summer camp. Casting a brief look into the rearview mirror, I began to wonder. Clearly there were signs people had recently visited the place. Was it possible I might find something more at night? Only one way to find out. By the time my headlights found the remnants of the old camp sign, I don't know what I expected. Winding my way down the dense road, I eventually switched my headlights back off and got back into stakeout mode. Arriving back at the clearing I had just visited the day before, I was struck by how different the area felt at night. While it had certainly felt faintly unsettling during the daytime, at night, the abandoned summer camp was downright terrifying looking, all broken buildings and gnarled shadows. sitting there for a few minutes, I let my eyes adjust to take the surroundings in. Much like before, I found nothing out of the ordinary. Like at Spruce Grove, I resolved to make sure to take as much in as I could before I continued my way back towards the hotel. Sitting there for a few minutes, everything looked normal before I thought I saw what looked like shadows moving. As I leaned forward, I grabbed my night vision goggles to get a closer look. The shadows moving were not shadows, but a bunch of people in black robes walking slowly through the woods. There were about a dozen of them walking in the woods on the far right side, as if it was the most natural thing in the world. To make things extra ominous, their black robes looked quite old, and were long enough that they were fully concealing whoever was wearing them. Now this look would be creepy enough by itself, but what made things extra odd was that to them, their attire seemed to be the most casual thing to wear, whereas a normal person would have been tripping and stumbling either from not being able to see or from getting caught on some tree branch. The only thing I could compare it to is the Dementors from Harry Potter. Taking a deep breath, I focused in on the task at hand. While the behavior was certainly creepy and caused to proceed with caution, it was by no means illegal by itself. Regardless, I make it a point to steer clear of people like that, especially at night in the middle of nowhere, and I had no idea if there was more of them out there or if they had seen me. After taking a quick look to make sure there wasn't more of them ready to attack my car, and snapping a quick picture for reference purposes, I cautiously backed out of the way and came with my lights still off. Fortunately, nothing followed me, and I managed to get back to the main road without much incident. I got back to the hotel just after midnight. Stepping out of the car, I stretched widely before walking into the lobby and heading up to my room. Feeling suddenly exhausted, I quietly made my way inside and unlocked the door before flipping on the light. Taking off my coat and removing my sidearm, I took a deep breath. That was that. Turning on some late-night talk show as a background noise, I'd changed out of my shirt, which had gotten soaked with sweat, before helping myself to a candy bar and an iced tea. Not noticing how thirsty I was until I started drinking it, I finished it in a few gulps. Feeling refreshed, I pinned a new note on the murder board containing the words, "Cult?" Since that was the best lead I had so far, I would have to think about whether to go back to the abandoned camp to try to get more information. I'd decide in the morning. Grabbing my book off the bedside table, I read for a bit to get my mind off the investigation. When I eventually felt sleep creeping up on me, I switched off the TV and got up to fully close the curtains to my window. Since my room was on the hotel's second floor and happens to face the parking lot, I briefly looked out into the parking lot while messing with the curtains. When I did, I stopped dead in my tracks as I noticed something off. Despite it being past 2 in the morning, there was someone standing towards the far side of the parking lot, which was right on the edge of one of the smaller parks. But that wasn't the creepy part. No. What was really made weird was the fact that whoever it was wearing a black hooded sweatshirt that completely hid their face, and they happened to be looking in the general direction of my room. It's amazing how one ordinary bit of clothing can seem so ominous under just the right circumstances. I think it's just because it causes the illusion that the person is headless. Feeling fully alert now, I slowly ducked down so they wouldn't notice that I had seen him. While sitting there crouched on the floor, I briefly considered what to do. Modern hotels have relatively good security, and I was on the second floor, so there was no problem there. I immediately thought that it must have been connected to what I saw this evening. Crawling past the window, I grabbed my phone from the bedside table, retrieved the selfie stick I kept in the bag. Believe me, it comes in handy more than you would think for PI work. And returned to the spot under the window. after turning on the record function and flipping the screen. I carefully raised it to the window so I could see if they were still there. They were, and they hadn't moved an inch. Good. Now I've got them on footage. Apart from the hoodie, they were wearing ordinary blue jeans, and height-wise, I'd put them at about 5'11". Judging from their build and general posture, it was most likely a male. Even with the phone, I had no way of seeing their face, but I did notice their general body language. He was standing with his hands in his pocket. The hoodie was a pullover, so it had that one massive pocket on the front, as opposed to the individual pockets on both sides, like they were waiting expectantly for someone. While I had the urge to stay up and watch them all night, fortunately I did not have to because modern technology could do that for me. Carefully lowering my phone, I also carefully closed the curtains before getting up from the floor and grabbing one of the tiny security cameras I always bring along with me on my work trips. After easily setting it up and syncing it to my phone, I crept back to the window and taking care not to draw too much attention, and I placed it on the window ledge. Feeling satisfied, I sent the video footage of my visitor to my lawyer friend with a brief message about what I saw earlier, and how I made sure there would be an eye on them all night. Still, a part of me wanted to stay up all night, and peer occasionally through the blinds just like in an old movie. But I gave in to the necessity of sleeping, and resumed preparing for bed. After making sure the door was deadbolted, I climbed into bed before checking my phone one last time. Black hoodie was still there. "Good night, random-ass person," I said to my phone before putting it down and rolling onto my side. Funny enough, I got the best sleep that night since I had arrived in town. Immediately after waking up, I checked the footage. The stranger had stood there a while longer before walking across the parking lot and not appearing again. Weird. I also responded to my lawyer friend's concerned email asking me what was going on. After quickly getting ready, I decided to go back to the abandoned summer camp since what happened last night could not have been a coincidence. With a cup of coffee in hand, I walked out into the bright sunshine and headed to my car. But while I was about to unlock it, I noticed that someone had stuck a white envelope under my windshield wiper, like someone would place a flyer for a fundraiser or something. Cautiously picking it up, I immediately noticed that there was something solid inside. Something firm, narrow, and thin. Plastic, most likely. The front of the envelope simply had the words, "Here's what you're looking for," on it with messy handwriting. Inside the envelope was a flash drive. Forgetting about all my previous plans, I made a beeline back to my room and immediately plugged the drive into my laptop. All that was on it was a single video. The video went fuzzy for a moment before it became clearer, and I saw all five of the missing students having a good time while they're at their campsite. Whoever was watching them and filming was a long distance away in some trees, and it was getting dark out, but there was no mistaking the faces that had been staring at me for weeks. But suddenly a sixth person came into focus, an attractive young woman who was getting quite friendly with Eric. Now this was something. The footage of them by the fire having a few drinks went on for quite a while, and nothing out of the ordinary happened until much later when the young woman snuck away under the pretense of going to the bathroom. Once she was sure the coast was clear, I saw her make a brief call on her phone before returning to the campsite, and I faintly heard her saying that there was something they had to see. They all went somewhere the camera didn't follow before I heard a woman scream and the footage ended. I immediately dialed the state police before notifying the parents I'd found something. Giving them both everything I had, all we had to do was sit back and wait. I also wasted no time in packing up and returning home as my work there was done. About a week after I returned home, I got a call updating me about the situation. They tracked down the young woman from the footage, and it turns out that she was associated with a huge sex trafficking ring. Someone had noticed the five students while they were returning home from a road trip and decided to follow them. The camping trip provided the perfect opportunity for them to strike, especially because they had a great way of getting close to them. The mysterious woman's presence was all the ruse to get access to the group's campsite. Under the pretense of being interested in Eric, she bumped into them and immediately did what she had done many times before. Once everyone had a few drinks, she led them to the trap. But when it came out that the five of them all came from well-off families, their plan changed because they thought the five would probably be worth a pretty penny in terms of a ransom. That was the only reason all five of them were still alive. I must admit, using a young woman as a trap was a smart move, as it would have worked well on both sexes. Men more naturally be more open and trusting of young women for obvious reasons, while women would be less wary around another female as well. As if that wasn't disturbing enough, she had been staying in the same hotel as me before I arrived. When the cops managed to track down the young woman, she told them that the missing kids were at some abandoned house about 2 hours away from where they disappeared. All five of them were found alive and the cops managed to arrest the people responsible. Believe me, I'm grateful that they found all five of them alive and all that. But a few questions still bother me. How did they know to give me the footage? Who was watching them in the woods that night? Why did they film them? And what were they planning to do if the young woman hadn't shown up?